Welcome back to ILTA Voices, your home for all things ILTA.
Hello, I'm James McGregor, and I'm the founder of Ethical eDiscovery, which is an eDiscovery consultancy firm. And I'm also the chair of ILTA's Litigation Special Interest Group. And today on this podcast, I'm joined by Rachel McAdams, who's a senior consultant at Sky Discovery, and Dina Hetherington, who's the eDiscovery Technology Manager at A&L Goodbody. And we're going to be talking about essential skills needed to become an eDiscovery expert. This is a follow-on discussion from a podcast that Dina, Rachel, I, and a few others had previously, where we were talking about what skills are required in order to create the perfect eDiscovery professional. And one of the skills that we highlighted during that conversation was the ability to problem solve. And so with that in mind, we're going to dissect that skill in today's discussion and unpack it and see if there's anything useful that we can share with the wider eDiscovery community. So, Dina, I'm going to start with you with the question. Can you please share some examples of typical problems that an eDiscovery professional might encounter during a project, taking the EDRM as a framework, and how they might find solutions to these problems?
Sure. So I think the typical problems that I've encountered anyway in eDiscovery revolve around probably a number of or maybe three main areas. You know, so you've got your technical problems, your logistical problems, and then maybe your external pressures. And I think you can encounter those three things probably each step of the way. So during your identification, preservation, collection, processing, review, production, et cetera. You know, some of the typical ones that do come in mind are, you know, during processing, if you encounter files that you're not familiar with, or the tool identifies issues with the files that you're trying to process, or it doesn't recognize them, or they're empty. You know, any one of those problems. When we do encounter those kinds of technical problems, we tend to, I think, or I tend to sort of go back to basics, you know, figure out what the problem was, how can we resolve this? How can we avoid this again? How can we avoid this? You know, can we fix our process so that this doesn't happen again? In terms of processing and like getting the data, usually it's going back to the client and telling them, can you resend this piece? Because there's been an issue with the transfer. I'd say 9 times out of 10, that's usually the issue. It's just something happened during the transfer. Sometimes we get data that relativity can't recognize. We use relativity, so I'll probably end up referring to relativity a lot, but really it's any review tool, right? Or any processing tool. You will have those times when your tool doesn't recognize it or doesn't know how to process it. In which case, then we try to come up with, you know, a workaround or a solution to make it into a format that relativity can recognize.
I guess, Dina, maybe just to interject in terms of like the frequency that you run into processing errors. I mean, to give some backstory, you know, obviously the reason that we're talking about problem solving being an important component in the life of an eDiscovery professional is because there are often problems during the life cycle of a project. I mean, yeah. When it comes to processing data, how often are you running into these kinds of errors?
I'd say it probably depends on your client and what kind of work you're getting. I want to say that the problem with not, you know, the transfer issues, I feel like that comes up a lot because it's just, you know, sometimes human error or machine error. It's something you can't necessarily check, you know, the client necessarily can't check on, you know, while it's transferring and everything looks good for them. So I think that comes up a lot. With the data that the tool doesn't recognize, I don't think that comes up as often as we probably make it sound, because, you know, when it happens, it's big, but I don't think it happens a lot. Like, so let's say I've been at ALG for a year and a half, and I've only encountered it once where we're, you know, we're trying to figure out. So, you know, it's not that often, but I don't know if you or Rachel have come across, you know, that kind of issue more often.
Well, Rachel, I was going to go back a step. So to Dina's point, a lot of the times when you're running into these errors, it's because the data that you've been sent from the client perhaps is problematic. What kind of problems can you encounter at the collection phase of a project in your experience? And what strategies have you tried in order to then hopefully avoid those downstream processing issues?
Oh gosh, too many problems at the collection stage. I think
that's why I skipped it.
You left it to me. I think obviously the less that you have someone experienced with collections actually touching that process, probably the more problems you're going to have. So I don't think anyone's a stranger to the problems of where clients self-collect incorrectly and you have to go back and solve that issue. And that is particularly problematic if you don't realize that until much later in the process. So generally my strategy for, I guess, solving or avoiding problems at the collection stage is just having the right people involved. And even if a client is self-collecting, it's being very proactive in terms of guidance on how this should be done. Guidance on best practice, on having some sort of verification process when you've got data from a client to check as much as you can, whether it's what you were expecting. I've actually just come off working on a case where the client was very insistent on self-collecting. They said, no, it's all good. We'll do it. We do this all the time. There's probably only about 900 emails that you'll need. And then lo and behold, they load it all up to the file transfer site and there's 100 gigabytes of data. And you just think, where did this come from? Those kind of problems are very common. And I think that the more common a problem is, the more likely you've seen it before, the more likely you know what the solution is. Those problems Dina was talking about, where maybe you have data that's not recognized by your tool or it's some really unusual data, you're probably not going to have seen it, that exact problem before, but you're seeing similar problems. So it might be a different data type this time, but if you can remember what you did last time or how you approached it or, you know, who you talked to about it, you've probably got a framework for how you might solve it this time. The other issue.
Go on, sorry.
I was just going to say the collections as well. You know, even if you have someone really experienced, there can be problems. You can have custodians who don't want to share passwords. You can have custodians who don't turn up. You can have data that is missed during collection because no one said, oh, by the way, this person's been WhatsApping the whole time and they've got a billion messages that are really important and we just didn't tell you about it. So due diligence around it, having experts involved, I think is, you may never avoid every single problem, but it probably gives you the best fighting chance to avoid as many of the obvious ones as you can.
Yeah. Sorry, James, before you move on, I was going to say about the data that you don't recognize, you know, similar to like Lotus Notes and the BlackBerry chats and now Slack and Teams, like the more we see it in the industry, then the faster the tools that didn't recognize it at first create solutions so that to make it easier for you. So, you know, you may not have a solution right now, but if it's, you know, if it's a common issue, chances are you'll get a solution soon.
I think that makes sense. And one of the things that we talked about on the prep discussion for this as well is sometimes there may not be a good solution, but ultimately if you're problem solving, you just have to stick together something which is hopefully as defensible as possible and that the circumstances allowed and also that is within budget. So, you know, maybe it is, and I think the example I gave previously, it's simply scrolling through a text chain on a device through an app that you can't collect and taking pictures of that such that you can validate that it was there and that's the original source data. Obviously, that's not something that's by any means a good solution, but that may be your only solution. And so, yeah, I guess the essence of problem solving is that you have to capture this information somehow and you have to look at it or exclude it from the review So how are you going to figure out a solution, recognizing all the various limitations that gets you there?
Yeah. And if you had all the time in the world, you could come up with amazing solutions. The part of the skill of problem solving is recognizing the problem, but also working out, you may have a limited amount of time to solve it. You might have a great solution that's going to cost a fortune, so it's a no-go. And you have to do something that is maybe not ideal, but gets you where you need to be. I certainly have encountered that a lot, where you're just sort of sticking things together with a band-aid to make it work, because that's all you have time to do. And I think if we all had a little bit more time, and we had infinite resources, and we had, hundreds of people working on it, we'd come up with great solutions. But I think part of the skill of it is working out what you can do in the time that you've got with the resources that you've got. And particularly on collections, I think that's important, because you're holding up a lot of the process, because the collections is the start, right? So if you don't have your data, you can't really do anything else. So you need to get what you need defensively. You might only have a day to get it if you're on site with a client. So you have to find a way that you can stand over, but doesn't necessarily involve, really big disproportionate exercises to get data that may or may not be important to the case.
Okay, so we've collected our data, we've now processed it without issue, and we're in the review workspace. Dina, what other problems might you encounter at this stage?
So I'd say at this stage, this is the stage when your case team, sends you, narrow terms to run across your data, and you come up with, oh, just 300,000 documents to review. So I think this is the stage where you really need your advisory hat on, right? Like, you need to really work with the case team so you can, really address what they're looking for. Just my experience is they usually start pretty broad, right? And then, you have to, like, narrow it down, but you can't just sort of chop it off, right? You have to narrow it down and still comply with either the order or what you've agreed, or if it's a re you know it, you have to comply with whatever was requested, right, within that project. So I think it's, really just understanding the end goal, and then being able to look at the search terms, find ways to narrow your data down with, and not just that, not forgetting that, we have a lot of analytics tools out nowadays, and that's a really good way to conduct early case assessment or narrow your data down, to really look at, okay, what do we have? You can use your concept searching, clusters, communication analysis. There's a lot of other ways other than just search terms to be able to look at your data and narrow it down, and in an auditable way, I guess, in a defensible way.
Okay, so in terms of the advisory hat, and I think that's kind of linked to the discussion that we all had previously about perhaps the difference being embedded at a law firm as an extension of the case team, as opposed to working externally as a service provider, where perhaps you don't have as much information regarding the case and the requirements, and therefore it's more challenging to offer consultancy advice without seeing the entire picture. But Rachel, with respect to once you're in the review stage, what are the types of problems, or how can you act as that advisor? What are the kinds of questions that you might want to ask the case team, and how can you uncover the information you need in order to be able to make the right tool recommendation, propose the right workflow, whatever it may be?
I think you need to understand what kind of case you're working on. If you're working on a litigation, so you want to know what the disclosure deadline is, and you want to work backwards from that, as to, how many documents could possibly be reviewed in that time. Look, what is feasible for a review team to get through? What the format of the disclosure, and if there's any data types that are going to cause them an issue, if there's any data types they want to spend more time on. If you're thinking about something like an investigation, you could be moving very quickly if it's some sort of regulatory investigation, in which case you need to get to the key information really, really quickly so that the client can prepare themselves. Or if it's an internal investigation, you know, you might be headed for a deadline of a board meeting where they need answers to 10 questions and that's all they care about right now. If it's a DSAR, you've probably got a very strongly ticking clock as to what you can actually do in that time. So I think you really need to understand what the case is. And from the point of view of working in a service provider, don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to ask the questions, because you're trying to do your best for your client. And it is easier when you're in a law firm, because you tend to just be exposed to what's going on in the case by virtue of being there, being their colleague. But I think a good approach to solving problems in general, especially if you're at service providers, just ask the questions so that you get the best context for what's going on. And don't be afraid to do it, because generally in my experience, lawyers are happy to answer those questions because they like to, you know, they want to share the burden with you as well and get access to your expertise. And what is it that they need to focus on? What do they need to get immediately? Is it just a case of let's get it through to something that they can review in the time period? If that's not going to be possible, can you help them think about how they could deal with the court and the other side to do rolling productions? You know, just help them think through the options that are there to get to where they need to go. But you need to understand what their goal is first before you can start coming up with lots and lots of solutions, because some of them might not be useful.
And I'd say, even when I was at when I was at a service provider and at law firms, you know, when I deliver search firm reports or results for like any searches that they have, you know, I still check, right? Like you wanna check your results before you, and if you see like the really high ones, you can, a lot of times you yourself can see it and say, oh yeah, that was too broad, or you know, maybe, and you can make suggestions. So you can kind of, as you're delivering the results, you can say, oh, I noticed these five terms were X, and you know, may I recommend this? Like, would that still capture, you know, this is like how that change would result in, would it still capture what you're looking for, you know? And then same with like the zero results. People always forget the super low ones, right? But that's like, that's an issue too, right? Like if it's not picking up, if the terms that they've given you isn't picking up any documents, then you should think about altering those as well, right? So they're not necessarily problems, but they could become problems later if you don't address them, you know, during that stage.
Yeah, I think they're definitely problems if there's a mistaken search syntax, and actually what the client thinks is a key search term, which is going to bring up a bunch of information, doesn't hit on anything. Yeah. And rather than flagging, well, perhaps, you know, if you used a wild card or something to pull back more documents to catch misspellings, you've got a greater opportunity here. I mean, I guess maybe that goes to the point of problem solving being kind of based on experience, where you've seen projects go wrong for not having flagged these kinds of issues in the past.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay, so we've got, we're in our review space. The review's progressing perfectly. We've established what the case is about. We know when the disclosure deadline is. Things are moving on pace and on budget. It's the perfect e-discovery project. And then as
when
we
you
start,
wake up,
exactly. And then as the production deadline starts to loom, suddenly there are inevitably issues that arise at that stage. Dina, I mean, what are the kinds of common issues that you might see at that stage, and how can you problem solve them?
So, a number of different things, right? One is, oh, we discovered more documents, but our deadline has not changed. So how can we meet our deadline? Another one could be where, you know, nothing has changed, but actually our reviewers are a lot slower than we thought they would be, because, you know, these documents are bigger, they're longer, they're more complex. We're just not going at the pace that we thought we would, or we lost a couple of reviewers, so we're a lot, whatever. But the issue is, we don't think we can meet our deadline, right? And I think for those kinds of issues, it's really, I think we tend to tackle those with really talking to the rest of the team, right? Who else is working with you? Because that's more, I think that's more of a team effort. A lot of times the technology team is a little separate from the review team, or if you're at a vendor, you know, same thing, you have a separate review team where maybe your case team's reviewing, but you're the technology. So I think usually that's all right, let's get our heads together. I prefer phone calls first, especially when delivering bad news or not so good news or issues. Let's have a call. But I think start thinking about solutions, right? Like, how can I get around, how, what can I suggest to get around this? And for those kinds of things, there are a number, especially if money is not an issue, then we can add reviewers. That's the easy one, right? We can add reviewers, we can train them, and we could probably resolve this. But most of the time, money, you know, our clients are cost conscious, and we can't just add, you know, 10 more reviewers. So what else can we do? Like Rachel suggested, well, we can do rolling deliveries, right? So we can tackle what we already have, finish that, produce that, and then quickly jump on to the additional data. But hopefully the other side is, or the court or whoever is expecting it, is okay with the rolling deliveries. What else? I don't know. Rachel?
This is, I think people are under a lot of stress as you come towards the end of the review with deadlines, yeah. And you know, there's a lot of work to be done, especially more senior lawyers who are looking at higher levels of review. They may have fewer documents, but they're probably spending more time on them. And I think it can be a very stressful time because it's probably not the only job they're doing either. So my experience is that that sort of end of the review, coming up to production, prepping for production, is when a lot of what I might call unforced errors can happen, where people make mistakes. And I don't mean the lawyers, I mean the e-discovery team can make mistakes, mm-hmm. or mistakes that were made earlier on get uncovered. You know, maybe someone ran a search incorrectly, and you know, now it's for batching, and now family. It's only just come to light. Yeah. Or you know, maybe some documents got excluded from an active learning index and they just turned up, or you forgot about the stuff you excluded. From active learning. So I think this is where a lot of mistakes sort of bubble to the surface, and then you end up having to solve all these problems that maybe didn't necessarily have to be problems, but are just caused by something upstream. And this stuff happens. So I think it's important to be pragmatic about it. In no case is perfect. So I think that this is a point where you can be finding lots of issues and problems that you have to solve, which may be your fault. And that's totally fine. But I think, you know, the worst thing you can do is sweep them under the carpet. And it's more important to report them and report them alongside some potential solutions. So you've missed loads of documents out of a search that someone was looking at, and now they have to review more. How do you help them with that? How do you, like, what kind of workflows can you propose to help them with that? Mm-hmm. And again, there's a bit of experience with that. You know, you tend, if you've made a mistake once, you're probably not going to make it again. But you can use that experience to help other people or to address maybe new mistakes that you've made, which end up with a similar result. So I do think that it's a difficult period because everyone's under quite a lot of pressure when the deadline's approaching, and I think it's once people have been getting to grips with the data and getting to grips with the review, that's when the questions come, that's when these things sort of get mm-hmm. unearthed. So keep your head about you, really, come with solutions or ideas of how you can solve these problems rather than just reporting.
Yeah.
Sorry, you've got another 2,000 documents to get
something.
Get through.
Something I tell my team a lot during this period, or you know, when you discover a mistake and you're short of time, and I tell them that's actually then it's more important to make sure you are conducting your QC and you're double checking stuff. Yeah. That's when you're more likely to make that mis you know an additional mistake, right? So like
Oh
the
my
more
God.
you're rushing, the higher the risk that you're going to make the mistakes that Rachel has mentioned. And so I always say, but don't skip the QC step, right? That's when it's most important, because you know you think, oh no, I'm sure I've gotten this right and I'll skip that step, because we never really find anything, except that's probably when we will find something. So yeah, I think it's really important to do your QC when you're under pressure, or in general anyway. I'm a big fan of QC. I'm also a big fan of processes. So you know, when you do find those issues, like, oh, we forgot this, or we forgot that, or you know, I like to say, okay, well, how can we update our process? Like, we don't have to do it right then, but like later, you know, okay, let's talk about what happened. Let's figure out what, you know, what went wrong, and let's update our processes so that this doesn't happen again to someone else, right? Like it's someone else on the team. Like let's and also like lessons learned, share your learning, you know. Because I think that's really how you can, you know, learn from your mistakes, right?
And
There's a project
ultimately,
management element to it as well, because if we're saying that there are probably always, there's always, maybe always going to be something that you're going to have to deal with that was unexpected, build that into your timelines. You know, I think it's really tempting to underestimate how long it's going to take to do something, because it makes everyone feel better that, oh yeah, look, we can get this done really quickly. But you know, build in some buffer time from experience. You know, if you don't need it, great. But if you've already thought about it and addressed it and said, well, you know, I think it's going to take 30 days to do the review, but let's give it 35, and see if we can get that into our timeline. And so you've actually got some breathing space to try and deal with some of these things, because to Dina's point, if you're trying to solve something 6 p.m. on the day of your deadline, and you still got to go through everything and to get the documents out the door, you're either probably going to make more mistakes, or you're not going to check it properly, cause more problems. So you know, if you can give yourself extra time by at the start of the project thinking, let's build in that buffer, then why not?
And I think ultimately that the QC step is really important, isn't it? Because you know, whilst deadlines are very important, of course, and to miss a deadline would be bad, to make the deadline but then to produce privileged material, or to create a mistake which actually is going to be far worse than having to apply for an extension. And it's at that point when you're in the heat of battle, when you aren't doing the checks that you should be doing, and then things do get missed. So yeah, Dina, I think you're absolutely right. That's when you have to be especially vigilant with respect to just taking a bit more time.
And I also tell my team, like, look, it's better that we caught the mistake now, right? So yes, it is a mistake and we made the mistake, no problem. Like, tell us, report it, like Rachel said. But, you know, I'd rather catch it now before, you know, when it's fixable still, and like all you have to do is fix the mistake, right? Whereas if it's, you know, if it's like later on down the line, then it's more than just fixing the mistake. It's telling the client, it's maybe paying a fine, you know, who knows what else, right? So it's definitely better to address the issue when you see it.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that we talked about on the prep call, and that is important during this stage, is working as a team. So, you know, not only within your organization, but maybe even in your wider network as well. And I mean, to give a recent example, I know I was talking to you guys both in a discussion last week about a project I was working on where there were large spreadsheets, and trying to find a methodology in order to be able to mass redact those. And it wasn't something that I had a solution for, but based on your respective experience, you were able to offer some guidance, which ultimately, was a useful thing to them to be able to bring to the client. And I think that's also it, isn't it? Chances are, going back to, you know, having experience and then learning from your mistakes, not just your own experience and your team's experience, but the wider industry's experience. There should be people in your network who've probably encountered problems in the past who you can lean on for advice.
For sure. I have a teammate that always uses the relativity community and the user groups, and a lot of his solutions are from there. Because I guess, you know, and it's true, like, why reinvent the wheel? someone's probably come across that solution. So if nobody from our team has, maybe somebody, you know, in the wider industry has. And usually he comes, you know, he comes back and he's like, oh, well, this is what I've read in the community. And then we try it, you know, and usually it works. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and there's an e-discovery Reddit thread as well, which I've been on in the past. I mean, that tends to be more gossip about who's a better company.
I'm definitely looking over it now.
Check it out. It's entertaining. But yeah, in terms of problem solving, absolutely. Like, you know, as much as you can cast the net wider to benefit from other people's experience, I think that's a great way to do it. Okay, so to kind of follow the analogy, that we've made our production deadline, and it looks like everything has gone smoothly. I wanted to kind of follow up on your point, Dina, about doing perhaps a wrap-up at the end of a project or kind of lessons learned. Is that something that you do as a matter of course? And ultimately, you know, what are the benefits of that?
We don't do it on every project. We do it on the big ones, because inevitably on the big ones is where you, even if everything went smoothly, you still have lessons to learn. Cause like, you know, oh, we did it this way and that way went really well, right? You know, those kinds of learnings. So I tend to do it on the big ones because they are sometimes time consuming, right? So we either tend to do them on the big ones or the ones that are non-standard or like, oh, this is the first time we did this, so let's create a process for it, right? Yeah, I'm a very process driven person. I like my process guides. I like everything written, you know, because it's easy to then like hand it over to someone else and then go through it. We all learn, you know, in different ways, but it's nice to have everything written down so you can be consistent. You know, you have a process. Everyone should be, you know, following the same process as much as possible. Like, I'm fairly flexible as well, right? Because e-discovery, it's not the same thing every time, but it's nice to have sort of at least the steps, right? Like, that you need to think about. And then, yeah, and if we, and it's, and I like those guides because it's more about like, what should you be thinking about? So it's not even like, do it, you know, do it this way, but like, you know, think about this, think about that, right? Like, so for example, with productions, like, okay, think about families. Are you producing with families or not families, right? Or just recently, you know, like there were like three teams, right? So the case team, the review team, our team, and we all sort of made assumptions that, oh, the other team is doing this, and nobody really asked the question and nobody did it. And in my head, I'm like, oh, I need to add that. Who is doing this, right? Because we always ask about delivery of the production, like who's delivering the production or who's delivering this. We never asked about the schedules. And recently I found out, the schedules didn't go out. You know, like we sent it to the case team like we normally do. And they were like, well, Dina sent the production. She must have sent the schedule. You know, so like, you know what I mean? So like, it's just, and so in my head, I'm like, oh, I better like fix my process guide. So it's just even little things like that. So it's not like an overhaul of your system, right? And it's not, and the guides aren't there so that they're, you know, that they're not very prescriptive, but they're just things, you know, steps to do, things to think about.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. What about you?
Sorry. One thing that we do is if there is a problem, a mistake, something happens that impacts the client or ends up in us doing rework or anything like that, is we have a, I think similar to Dina, we have a process internally where that gets escalated to the wider team to say, look, this thing happened. Let's get some individuals together who may not have actually been involved in the actual project that the mistake or the problem happened on, but let's think about how we can stop this happening again. And yeah, as Dina said, either update the process, put a new process in place, change how we template things in mm-hmm. the review platform. And, you know, it's everyone makes mistakes, problems happen. I'm very sanguine about that, you know, that just happens. But it's how you solve it and how you stop it happening again, which I think is the differentiator and how you can really learn from that.
Yeah, and I would say in my former role, often these problems are highlighted when it gets to invoicing time, because ultimately you send an invoice to a client, and if there were issues with the project, the invoice ends up being scrutinized, and as such, you know, that triggers and granted, you know, this is generally too far along in the process, but that normally triggers a second investigation of, okay, actually what happened during this project? Because, you know, the reality is no business wants to be sending out invoices that aren't going to get paid. So, right. You know, how can they avoid that type of thing happening again in the future?
And it's also, it's bad. And this has just popped into my head. Thinking about the post office inquiry in the UK, I think we've probably all seen a list of all the problems that they've had that have caused their disclosures to be late, to be incomplete. And, you know, I'm sure they're working very hard to fix it. But it's reputational as well, right? If you're keep making problems and you make the same problems, you make the same mistakes every single time, you know, that's going to impact not just, you know, one invoice, but it might impact all your invoices. So it's a really important part of what we do is to be able to solve issues, because e-discovery is complicated and technical. And I think that problem solving is one of the key skills that we can bring to help address that.
Agreed. Okay, well, look, so we've now done our project. It was perfect. We've invoiced the client. They've paid our bills, you know, before payment's due. So it's, as you say, it's a dream, Dina. I don't know what's happened. but I guess going back to kind of just general problem solving examples, one thing that I wanted to ask you guys, just anecdotally, if you've got any to hand, are there any specific problems you can think of that you've encountered in recent projects where you found a good solution? And maybe it's a tool, maybe it's a workflow. Just, I guess I'm thinking in terms of tips that might be useful for others in a similar situation.
Yeah, I have an example. So I've been working with a client on a fairly big project where we have a lot of data in foreign languages. And the actual workflow of having to review multiple languages was totally fine. But once it gets to sort of a second level or a more in-depth review, it's mostly English speakers doing that. So we were looking at translation solutions to machine translate all of the foreign language documents. But those documents were full of incredibly technical language that our machine translation solution just didn't translate correctly. So we actually did a bit of digging and did a bit of development work to build a new tool in Relativity that would force our machine translation service to translate particular words in a particular way, or to not translate them at all. So for example, if it's the name of a city or something that actually has a literal translation that was being translated, but we don't want to translate that. We want to keep it as is because it's the name of a place. So that was
like Los Angeles.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And so it meant that all the translations that we now run are a lot more accurate because we've taken all the knowledge that the legal team have about how this stuff should be translated and sort of put it into the middle of our process to make sure that everything goes through as it should. And that's probably a good example of a problem that we had a lot of time to solve, right? But we had time to implement it and we had time to build it. If that had been 2 days before a disclosure deadline and they said we need to disclose translations with all of these documents, it probably wouldn't have been a great solution because we'd been sat there for a week building it. But it was a really good solution at the time because we had the resources and we had the time. And it's been really great, actually. Used it on other projects as well now. So it's become part of our standard toolkit. So yeah, you solve one problem, but then you can take the solution forward with you as well.
Nice. Dina, any other thoughts?
No thoughts. Not to answer your question, but I do have an anecdote which I think people might find funny, and I think it is a good sort of closing thing, because it goes back to don't be afraid to tell someone you've made a mistake. This is like 9 years ago. 9 years ago, I was like, it's very new to the technology side of things. Before this, I had always been a review manager. So I'm now a project manager, a senior project manager. And so I'm in Relativity, I'm doing things, whatever, I'm running searches or whatever. But for whatever reason, I was in the folder browser, and there was like this set of I created a new folder or something, and there was the set of documents, and I was like, oh, this is wrong. And I just deleted the folder and moved on. And so my colleague who was working in the same on the same project was like, my searches, like the numbers have changed. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll take a look. And he was like, did you just do something? And I was like, well, I just deleted that folder. And he's like, what do you mean you just deleted that folder? And I was like, because it was wrong. And so like he looks and he's like, I think you deleted documents. Sorry, I still laugh about this because I was like, what? Like, I mean, I looked at him and I was like, why would I have deletion rights? Like, no one, like, why would you give me deletion rights? I think it was like week two of my job. You know, I was like very new. And I, like, in my head, I was like, who is the idiot that gave me rights to delete documents and did not tell me that I had these rights? And so I was like, okay. And so I run to my boss and I say, okay, this is what happened. And, you know, he was great. Like, it's so, so, so amazing when you have a boss that is super calm when you are dying. So, you know, he was quite calm. And luckily at that job, we at that place, we had like really smart technical people, like a developer, you know, so he was like, all right, I'll take a look. And honestly, in less than 24 hours, this guy found the documents, reinstated everything, looked, you know, because we had the history and Relativity, was able to like recreate all the tagging. It's like he just was able to make it was almost like I didn't make that mistake. And but it was amazing, you know, it was amazing in terms of teamwork, how my boss handled it, how that, you know, the person who fixed it handled it. Like he was like, no one was panicking, and I think that's very important. So you know, flag that there's an issue, don't panic about it. And yeah, and you'll get a resolution, and it's like nothing ever happened.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's a great anecdote to conclude it on because, yeah, I mean, as you said, ultimately, this wasn't your fault. You should never have been given delete permission.
It wasn't my fault.
But what I also found funny is the fact that you cited this as an example of why you should tell the truth. But actually, it was your colleague who spotted that you deleted the folder rather than
pressing. Well, I didn't know. I didn't know. I was the one who had to tell my boss about it. I didn't know. And I'm sure if I noticed it, I would have. But I had no idea.
No.
Because but, I didn't know I could delete documents, James.
Well, absolutely. But as you say, I mean, what a perfect response from your boss there to recognize that, we need to reach a resolution here and rather than get frustrated in any capacity.
And I'm guessing, I'm sure this has happened to a lot of people because back then there were no like prompts, like, are you sure you want to delete this? You are about to delete X number. Now you have that, by the way, in Relativity. So it tells you what you're about to do. They didn't have that 9 years ago.
Oh, great. Well, look, thanks, Dina. Thanks, Rachel. I think that kind of wraps us up nicely there. I guess in terms of this is going to go out both on the Podbean and then on the video cast. And I encourage anyone who's got questions, comments, get in touch. And also we're doing further of these discussions around other skills related to e-discovery projects. And so, yeah, thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, James and Rachel.
Thank you, both.